First of all, I would like to apologize for not having sent you the written paper before, but I have the slides which I'm going to use. I will stick to them. So, but I, considering the time I've been allowed for 25 minutes, I will, some of them will just skip them. Sorry? Okay, I tried. This is the paper has two parts. There is a boring for me. Maybe it's the more interesting part for you about what has happened in Spain. And there is at the end another section, which is the one I'm really looking forward to share with you. It's trying to draw some general ideas from the Spanish experience, which could be useful somewhere else. I will mainly study this period from mid-90s. And what has happened in Spain is that we have had a huge economic boom. We were told that we had even had reached a different stage, particularly from year 1999, and that was understood as a positive effect of the Spanish economy joining the euro. So we were not only growing faster, but also in a more a stable pattern than in the past. We were also getting rid of our major problem, unemployment. We were creating jobs at a very huge rate. Never ever we had created as many jobs during this is the 50s, just after the Spanish economy entered the European Union. But after joining the European Monetary Union, the job creation was not only larger but also longer in time. And the most striking result was that we got rid of the always present high public deficit, high public debt, and always high rates of inflation. So we were in Alice Wonderland, and then in 2 years' time, everything just reversed. So that's what happened to GDP growth. The employment just disappeared, and the unemployment started to rise again, and all the public deficit and the public debt started to worsen. So we are still debating in Spain about what went wrong. But what I try to suggest here is that maybe the right question, did really something went wrong, or was something that we should have expected? The official view is that nothing went wrong. Yes, we accumulated some disequilibrium, and we were unlucky because some of the countries caused financial distress, which ends by affecting us. So the fall was the underestimation of the disequilibriums and the bad luck of being in the outer world in terms of financial financially speaking. But my view is that all of this was perfectly understood if you look at the theory which was available to us. So this is the structure of the presentation. The two first points are the the boring part for me. I will use a lot of data, which I, some of them will be just skipped. And then my intention is to focus on the third part of the presentation. Well, the determinant of the economic boom in Spain. It wasn't something which you could not, you could have foreseen. In the after the recession in the late 80s in Spain, the peseta was devalued for 5 times, accounting by 20%. So this devaluation had a really an impact in a positive impact in terms of price competitiveness. Also, the destruction of employment during the recessionary years of the early 90s contributed to an increase in the labor productivity, and this was a major push to the whole thing. Then we had the incredible reduction in the inflation rate in Spain. We had in the early 80s an inflation which was between 15 and 16. So we had a sharp and sustained reduction in inflation. We caused low wages growth, and also the input of immigrants, which has had two effects on the labor market. Yes, it allowed to some sectors to develop, and it produced an stimulus on internal demand. Then which is more in interesting for the government in Spain is that the first explanation is we just enter in the European Monetary Union, and this has caused a different this made a difference for the outcome of the economy. So and this has proved to be false at all. And the interest rates were like this. So we were talking about rates around 20% in the mid 80s, and now we are talking about interest rates below 3% for sure, and even lower in terms of real rates. And the expansion of credit has been always the same in Spain. It has been very unstable, but during this phase, what is most important is that it is the difference between the GDP and the credit rate of growth keeps high, but it keeps for a longer period. Okay? Well, all these produced some disequilibriums which were overlooked at all during that golden years in Spain. First, the inflation was low, but we had a difference around 2 percentage points with the euro area. It caused a loss of competitiveness constantly. And then we had two problems which the government said didn't exist. One was the current account problem. So when we joined the European Monetary Union, one of the arguments was, well, like regions, the whole economy will not face ever to a current account problem in terms of financing this imbalance, this disequilibrium. And the other was the ability to get funds in the international market, not only in the euro, but also in the international market. So we accumulated huge particularly for the financial system, huge debts in the international market. Both to finance the current account deficit, but also some other developments which we'll later could mention.
Yeah? Just ask a point of clarification. What are the different colors in the current account?
Yeah.
Lines.
Well, they don't come here. I have in the paper. In the paper, this is.
Does it matter, or do we just look at the boxes?
No, this is just the different section of the balance of payment.
Okay, so it's the boxes we're looking.
Yeah. Okay. This is services, which is always surplus, and the other are just in growing deficit. Okay. There was also not only an excess demand that caused this disequilibrium, but also some sectors, particularly the housing and the market, grow, and an stagnation in the labor productivity. Okay. And most important, to understand why did the employment destroy so easily, was the fact that the around 90% of contracts had a length above a year, so this is a problem all over the all over Europe, but in Spain is much worse. So that explains why the creation of the job creation reversed so easily in Spain. Well, we also have some other ideas. There was an increase in capital, but it's what they call, some of the people also use this term, a sort of soft capitalization in the sense that here you have the data. This is the share of investment in the total GDP, and this is the percentage of housing investment in total investment, which accounted here. You can see the axis on the right hand side, which is around 90%. 90% of the total increase in investment was diverted into housing and construction markets. That's what I call soft capitalization. And then there was a huge expansion of credit, particularly in the housing and construction market. And what I have mentioned earlier, the false and incredible belief. Incredible because it was sustained even for the Bank of Spain, that being part of EMU could mean just apart from any crisis which might happen in the near future. All these disequilibriums produce an increased debt, not only by households but also by firms. This is the total debt as percentage of total income, or this is the total return in firms. And for the households, most of the increase in debt was due to a rise in here you have in red the part of the world, the share of the world which comes from house and the rest assets. So the increase in wealth was due to an increase in housing, particularly for increasing prices. No, nothing else. So what this mean was that we were losing competitiveness, and there was an increased vulnerability and completely unbalanced growth, and what really stopped the ball for getting bigger was that the two variables that inflated the balloon was the expectation about prices of housing and the increasing amount of banking credit. And this just vanishes from very quick in the housing market from not in the 2006, but even earlier. This is the prices of house. These are the official statistics from Bank of Spain. And the bank credit, which had been going up like this, this is to the red is credit for construction and housing market, and in blue you have the rest of the activities. So the credit just started to fall down dramatically from 2005. And the bad loans started to rise extremely quick. Although we had very low level of bad loan ratios for any kind of activities. And we all know this from the Financial Times. So the party came to it. So, well, what has the government done to recover, to restore what has been done badly in the past? Well, short-term measures, First of all, trying to recover the aggregate demand from fiscal and income policies in Spain. And also, we have discovered that we know the all the public banks were privatized in the late 80s, and the government don't have any instrument to compensate the credit crunch from the private sector. So the only instrument he has is the ICO, but is a very tiny institution. And the only instrument available from the short-term perspective is labor market deregulation. That's why you always come to the same place. Not because it caused the whole problem, but it's the only device which is available to the government. In the long run, everybody says it has to be increased the competitiveness of the economy, and this is. This is for free. This has just come up. I don't know why, but there is a continuous effort by the government to increase banking consolidation or to reconsider the. What they call the banking, the Spanish banking model. So this is completely new, and I will say a little bit more about this later. And then they also claim that the European Central Bank should set more realistic conditions, monetary conditions in terms of interest rate for the Spanish economy. Since over the past, it has been clear that the interest rate for the Spanish economy, which should be the according to the Taylor rule, should be the blue line, should have been higher than for the whole European Monetary Union, which should also have been higher according to the Taylor rule. So there was to lose money for the whole euro. And more, even worse for Spain. That's what the Bank of Spain says. So I have some more figures about this later.
What's the definition of the monetary in commodity?
Well, the red line is this. This is taken from a paper from the Bank of Spain. So I didn't work out the data, but I have them in another figure at the end. This, according to them, is the difference in between the interest rate set by the ECB and the proper interest rate according to the Taylor rule, from according to the inflation and the GDP deviation from long run. So for the whole what the line says that is if it were zero, the ECB were making the target according to the Taylor rule. So what they say is, well, the ECB has been too loose. So we don't know why. But for Spain, it has been even worse. So maybe all this mess has been caused by not having a monetary policy, or for the ECB having set an interest rate which is good for the whole, but not good for us in particular. And also, of course, it's been the debate rise over the regulation of financial markets in Spain. So there is the. My idea is two questions on of these responses. Will they work? Are they sufficient or not? With respect to the short-term measures, this can be sustained for long. The public debt in Spain, public deficit is increasing, and they won't last for long, as it says there. And the funding coming from the public sector, it's been good according to everybody, but it's 1% of the problem. So you can't trust the solution will come from here. And the labor market deregulation in terms of reducing wages or introducing more deregulation is the only condition, is the only variable the government can tackle. But it hasn't caused the problem at all. So, and the structural change, everybody says in Spain we should stimulate high-tech sectors or reduce to the dependence on these sectors, which has caused the recession. But it's easier saying than doing, I'm afraid. And banking consolidation. This is my first worry about the Spanish case. We had a sound banking system. And my view is that this the changes that might be introduced to cope with the recession will have probably the contrary effect from the perspective of long-run economic growth, and particularly for some regions. Well, the Bank of Spain says we need, because of the crisis, we need to introduce changes in the banking system. Why? There are too many banks. But there were that many 5 years ago, and there seemed to be no any problem. And some people start to say that we don't have big enough banks in Spain. But it's the same like 10 years ago. But very few, and this is my particular point of view, seem to reflect on what do we need banks for, and what role have they played in in the long run growth process in Spain. So I think consolidation takes place just because of the short-term problem of the crisis, but some people are not considering reconsidering the effect for the longer perspective. And well, you might agree or disagree, but for Spain it's very important, for example, to consider those two ideas. What does consolidation mean, and what would the effect be for an economy where there is more higher preferences for bank credit rather than from financial markets? It seems to me that the Bank of Spain is not taking into account this difference, and that we are coming back to the days where the people thought that no matter where the money or the funding come from, the only problem is to get it in for the right price. And this contradicts some even of the empirical results which we'll later see. 5 minutes. So the financial efficiency versus functional efficiency. So, I mean, all this debate about consolidation in banking is about achieving higher financial efficiency. But how about this, which is also important? We'll come to this later. And how about this, this other literature about the importance of proximity or relationship banking against what it is called transactional banking? Okay. When you were working from the perspective of regions or countries less developed, there is also the question of, well, maybe we should need less efficiency in the short run, but more functional efficiency, because relationship banking plays a much more powerful role for development under certain circumstances. So, and I think the Bank of Spain is not considering this. Also, sometimes it is raised the question of, well, we know that the more developed countries have more efficient banking system or more financially developed economies. But this is what the cross-section correlation says. But how about history? And I have a few quotations here, which are not, they come from the National Bureau, and they say yes that, despite weaknesses, financial institutions at some point in time were able to produce the economic development, even in the UN. This is a work, a paper for the United States. So this will come later for this. Otherwise, also the consolidation proposal are based on the idea that we could overcome this, we could solve this credit crunch problem we have in certain countries if we eliminate this division between large or national banks and small regional banks. So if you are able to increase the size of the banking system, so these asymmetries will disappear, so the availability of credit will be easier. But then, if you think this, then you have to explain why, under the same circumstances, in one country with a given banking development, along the business cycle, this happened. These are the data for the last two ups, for the former up and down recession in Spain. And we are working out the data and the estimations, proper estimation from an econometric point of view for the current period, 94 on. So
time to wrap up.
Okay. Just 1 minute.
Spanish practice.
Sorry? And so how about consolidation and consolidation is about tries to reinforce only the supply side of credit. But what if the availability of credit also depends on the demand side, or particularly on liquidity preference? So consolidation will restore, will reshape the banking industry, but it's not affecting the all variables which are implied in the process of credit creation. So it's not only a matter of increasing bank size, it's also a matter of other things being around. And I don't think this is going to be also everything taken in. So what I think is much better is to combine both the banking development, which has to be in partly with the credit supply constraint, but also the changes in liquidity preference which might be come up with these ups and downs in financial stability, and this is what Minsky is very useful for. And finally, for the monetary conditions, I think it's an excuse from the Bank of Spain claiming that it's been the ECB who has, with this loose monetary policy, caused all this monetary distress in Spain, because the monetary distress has been always for present. This is what has happened from 1999 on. So what we had in the Bank of Spain figure was the reverse. Here we have all the regions, and we see here the Spain should be on average, the average of this, and that for all the regions the interest rate should have been higher than the one set by the ECB. But previous to our previous to the euro to the euro, there was also the same. So that was the interest rate set by the Bank of Spain, and there were regions which needed a higher one, and others which needed a lower one. And this lasted for 10 years, and nothing happened there. So the Bank of Spain is claiming some things which are not. You cannot rely upon.
Everybody else, we were asked.
Okay.
Really took where is there give people a chance to ask questions at the time of the next paper.
Okay.
So there's plenty to chew on there.
So we now or later?
Thank you.
Well, it's quite refreshing to listen to a debate about there being too many small banks, because we've been fed a steady diet of concern about banks. Too big and